always come back to anything that needs action. Will come back once we have a quorum, but we can get started on some of the other stuff. So we'll call the meeting to order. And Jennifer, are you going to do roll call?
Yes, I will. Thank you. Agua Caliente Band of Cahuilla Indians. Blythe. Cathedral City.
Present.
Coachella. Desert Healthcare District.
Present.
Desert Hot Springs.
Present.
Indian Wells.
Present.
Indio. La Quinta.
Present.
Palm Desert. Palm Springs. Rancho Mirage. And Riverside County District 4. We do not have a quorum, as you know, Vice Chair, but again, we can go ahead and start and take action, or not take action, but do what we can.
Right. Okay, let's move on to public comment. Jennifer, do we have anybody that wishes to do any public comment?
I do not see any hands raised, and we did not receive any written comments.
Okay, very good. Okay, we'll move on to chair committee staff announcements. Anything from the committee? How about staff?
Yes, thank you, Vice Chair and members. Thank you so very much. I actually have a couple of announcements. The first is, you'll recall a couple of months ago, we did discuss moving ahead with leasing a firehouse near the Safe Desert Hot Springs from the County of Riverside in order to meet both the near-term and long-term needs of the CV Housing First program. You authorized the executive director to negotiate with the county. The county has been a great partner through the process. Unfortunately, it just wasn't quite the right fit. So we are not going to be moving ahead with the firehouse. We'll be looking for other spots under that authorization that you provided that allows him to negotiate for a city or county owned. And in the meantime, using some space that CVAG has for our near-term needs. The other announcement that I wanted to make, and as a former reporter, I admit I'm a little reluctant to do this because I don't like to tip off what others are working on. But in the next couple of weeks, you will be seeing a story by KESQ. They reached out to us about doing a profile on the CV Housing First program through the eyes of some of our clients, and you all will get to know Mr. Leonard. Many folks know Mr. Leonard in the city of Indio. Many of our service providers know Mr. Leonard. Actually, Mayor Furman had to call 911 to help Mr. Leonard at one point, which is eventually how he landed in our program. I got to know him more recently. And know of his love of cheese, his love of candy, and a great, great appreciation for his mom. I think he's got quite the story that I think you'll see on TV probably next week, maybe the week after. But I did want to give you all a heads up that that is coming, and then you will hear even more about Mr. Leonard in our second quarter because he was permanently housed. Chair, I would just also note for the record, while I'm here, that Charlie Townsend of Rancho Mirage is here, and you now have a quorum.
Okay, perfect. And Erica, I don't know if I probably needed to read the instructions for public participation. We are doing a Zoom meeting, and the link is on the website as well as the password. So if you are watching remotely, please know that we will include you in any public comment should you need to comment. Okay, so with that, then, we'll move on to the consent calendar, as we do have a quorum now. I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar.
I'll make a motion to approve.
I'll second Cathedral City.
There's a motion and a second. Roll call, Jennifer.
Chair, you don't need a roll call. If you can just acknowledge the ayes with the waving of the hand and the nays.
Okay, we can do that. All in favor, aye.
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 Anybody opposed? Any abstentions? Motion will carry unanimously. Yeah, it depends. Different organizations want roll calls when we're doing Zoom, but that's okay. If we don't need it, we don't need it. Okay, now we'll move on to item 6A, which is a discussion and action item. It's an update on the revenue stream feasibility study for affordable housing and associated transportation needs. Peter Stanton is going to give the staff presentation.
All right. Good morning, Vice Chair and members of the committee. So in April 2021, the Executive Committee authorized CVAG to enter into an MOU with Southern California Association of Governments, aka SCAG, to accept $550,000 worth of Regional Early Action Planning Funding, or REAP, provided by the state of California. CVAG is utilizing these funds for two projects. One is an Affordable Housing Catalyst Fund. This has been identified by Lift to Rise through its Affordable Housing Collaborative Action Network. And this fund is providing capital subsidies, operating subsidies, and loans to stimulate affordable housing production. Lift to Rise briefed the Homelessness Committee on fund progress in February, and updated metrics have been provided in the staff report. The other project is a revenue stream feasibility study for housing and associated transportation needs. In December 2021, the Executive Committee authorized CVAG to enter into a contract with Cosmont Companies to conduct this study, and work kicked off in January. Since then, Cosmont has begun surveying potential funding mechanisms in use within the Coachella Valley and elsewhere, and their subcontractor, Arellano Associates, has been compiling a stakeholder database and drafting an engagement plan for the public outreach component of the project, which is expected to begin in the next few months. We have with us today Joe Diegas, Senior Vice President with Cosmont Company, and Stephanie Espinoza, Senior Project Coordinator with Arellano Associates, and they'll be providing further details on their progress to date as well as next steps. So I'll hand it over to Joe.
Okay, thank you, Peter, very much. Hello, Chair, members of the committee. Joe Diegas here with Cosmont Companies. Again, a real estate economic development and public finance advisor, privileged to work for CVAG in this endeavor. I'll cover just a few high points in addition to what Peter has already covered. We can proceed with the presentation. As Peter mentioned briefly, we're in task one of our scope of work, which is evaluating the tools already in use within the CVAG communities and also tools in use in other communities, elsewhere in the state, elsewhere nationwide, et cetera. We'll give you an update on those tasks so far in some detail today. We've also prepared, really our fantastic outreach team in Arellano Associates has prepared a draft engagement plan that we will also walk through today. Where we endeavor to go from here is to crunch some numbers. It's the part that we really enjoy, which is based on committee feedback today and some of our own findings so far, suggest some tools to go into a deeper dive, different assumptions about things like district boundaries or revenue contribution scenarios, things like that, to actually give a sense to CVAG, the committee, other CVAG committees, on how many dollars we could potentially be talking about being made available for affordable housing, housing supportive infrastructure, transit supportive infrastructure. In tandem with that quantitative analysis is also evaluation of potential policy initiatives, policies that would support the quantitative tools, the revenue tools that we'll be evaluating and vetting further to provide what we would call sort of a more comprehensive package, not just the tool, but the policies that support the success of that tool. Really in parallel with quantitative analysis and policy evaluation is stakeholder engagement. Stevie from Arellano Associates will cover what we will do specifically, how we will reach out, and of course, everything we review today is completely subject to the committee feedback. The end goal is to document a roadmap, not just to provide some numbers, not just some policy recommendations, but to package it together with something actionable for CVAG, a roadmap to actually implement in the context of a regional strategic plan. Okay, so I'll go through at a high level and appreciate any questions or comments as we move through this. The tools that we've evaluated so far, both within the CVAG region and outside the CVAG region, beginning first with within the CVAG region. While what we read to be the intent in the RFP is ongoing sustainable revenue tools, we certainly do that evaluation, but we also felt we couldn't do the study justice without looking at one-time sources that can complement an ongoing sustainable revenue stream. And one of those are impact fees. So very high level findings, impact fees are quite common among the CVAG communities. Things like TUMF, other acronyms that committee members may be familiar with, are commonplace within the CVAG region. Also going forward a little bit on the supportive policy channel, what we're finding are things like inclusionary housing policies are not currently common within the CVAG community. We do acknowledge that it is under study in several jurisdictions. We know Cathedral City, Indio, Palm Springs, and those sorts of things we are identifying. Housing and sustainability districts. This is indeed one of those tools that could provide sustainable ongoing revenues to the extent it is desired by the local communities. It is a completely locally driven tool, really at the city level, could also be done on the county level. These are things like tax increment financing or TIF. So not a new tax in any way, but just a sort of partitioning, allocating, setting aside what we would compare to a retirement account or a savings account for a child, setting aside some portion of future dollars into a special account that would be dedicated for affordable housing and supportive infrastructure uses. This has been in the early stages of implementation in unincorporated county jurisdiction near Salton Sea. We know other communities have looked at this. We know Indian Wells has explored in some detail. So not completely foreign to the CVAG communities. Housing-related grants. So there are so many sources, state level, federal level. There have been what we would classify limited awards so far. Coachella was awarded an infill infrastructure grant with a relatively large amount of funding. We do believe, while it's not super prevalent in the CVAG communities, we do think there is some competitive positioning within some of the communities, particularly those with disadvantaged community census tracts. Zoning incentives. So these come in various forms. Many of the communities we found have things like local density bonus provisions, completely apart from state density bonus laws, other ways to incentivize certain types of development, such as those with affordability restrictions. We found examples of this in Cathedral City, Coachella, Desert Hot Springs, Indian Wells, Indio, others, the list goes on. And we will provide some further color on this and what we see in other jurisdictions, but we do indeed see some measure of zoning incentives for affordable housing available within the CVAG regions. And then sort of a catch-all, there are many what we would consider innovative tools that have been used in the CVAG region that we hope to just sort of consolidate for the group's benefit so that everyone understands what other communities are doing. The examples of these are self-help development or funding assistance, certainly the Lift to Rise Catalyst Fund, pre-development loans, Habitat for Humanity. The Thermal Beach Club had an interesting example, a community benefit program, essentially a way of really incentivizing particular development projects that provide community benefits from what we would call a pre-selected menu of community priorities and benefits. How those benefits are identified, we have seen vary from community to community. We'll give an example in a second, in a few minutes from another community. But it's a very innovative way not just to automatically allocate things like, I don't know, density or parking reductions, but rather to get something out of it from the local community perspective in terms of community benefits. Things that we see used in other communities, move forward. Certainly, housing linkage and housing in lieu fees. These are common in many other communities and increasingly so as an alternative to on-site inclusionary housing requirements. Maybe folks have seen things like the City of Los Angeles housing linkage fee, City of Pasadena housing in lieu fee. It can work a number of different ways. The linkage fee side is typically assigning a fee for non-residential uses, things like commercial, industrial, office users, where it is financially feasible to contribute some funding that gets set aside for affordable housing uses. In lieu fees are probably more familiar to folks. It's the idea that if you're not providing on-site affordable housing, that you're contributing with an in lieu fee to the local jurisdiction, may get set aside in something like a local housing trust fund or something like that. Inclusionary housing policies, again, while not prevalent today in the CVAG communities, but under study, they are certainly becoming more and more prevalent in other communities. percentages folks may see are things like 10%, 15%, 20% of total units, typically in multifamily residential projects, being set aside for deed-restricted affordable housing, low, very low, moderate, at different levels of affordability. Housing and sustainability districts, those same types of districts that we know, have been evaluated and begun in jurisdictions like Indian Wells and Salton Sea area. There have been 16, and since redevelopment agencies were dissolved, there are now 16 of these districts formed so far statewide. It's accelerating. And many of these do come with things like inclusionary and affordable housing set aside requirements. There are examples like the County of Los Angeles EIFD participation policy that say if a county will join with a city on one of these tax increment financing districts, that a certain portion of funding may need to be set aside to a local housing trust fund, or a certain percentage of inclusionary housing might be required. And certainly housing. Again, we wouldn't call this a sustainable ongoing revenue stream, but the list of housing related grants keeps on growing. And to do this study justice, we feel like it's worth, throughout the course of our study, you know, keeping that list updated and sharing that with the CVAG stakeholders. Other tools, zoning incentives, I mentioned another example we're seeing, this whole idea of community benefit. It's the idea that it's not just automatically allocating density, for example, in the concept of specific plans or general plan updates. In many cases, in Cosmont's experience, when you do that and you have, in some cases, non-cooperative landowners that really have no intention of developing themselves, all you do when you automatically upzone is increase the asking price that they put on the for sale sign, and it doesn't actually generate new development of any type. These sort of zoning incentive programs, instead of allocating things like density to projects automatically, but rather reserve it at the local jurisdiction level and only allocate it for projects that actually perform and ideally deliver from a specified preset menu of community objectives. We've seen examples of this, some of the pictures shown here, small community in Santa Barbara County. If a developer provided literally a public restroom on the median in that community, or contributed trail connectivity throughout the city, they would be eligible to receive an incentivized level of residential density. That's just one example. Community land trusts have actually been in use in other jurisdictions for quite some time. There was actually a study done over a decade ago, just before I joined our firm, for CVAG, on how sort of a nonprofit land ownership model can work to subsidize housing costs. Our deliverables go into this in greater detail, but you know, at a high level, it's the idea that a nonprofit owns land and can make the housing built upon that land more affordable to folks because it is being incentivized given the nonprofit ownership of the land, and the nonprofit retains ownership of the land. It is only the improvements upon the land that are being offered to home buyers and renters, both for sale and rental. There are examples of that. Many more in Northern California. And public finance liquidity strategies. In our experience, at least at Cosmont, this is sort of a less obvious connection, but being involved in our communities on the finance side, as well as the economic development and housing side, what we have often seen is that there's an outstanding debt, typically at higher interest rates than are prevalent today. And what many communities have been able to do, even in Southern California, are essentially refinance, like anyone would do, but on a mortgage or something, refinance, create early cash flow, lower payments, but not just to put the savings in a bank account, but to actually utilize it for economic development and housing projects that generate a positive return, as well as generating community benefits to the local community. That's, again, very happy to go into greater detail as desired. At this point, I'd love to hand it to Stevie to talk a little bit about our stakeholder engagement plan to move forward from here on out, but I'll certainly remain for questions on the technical piece. Over to you, Stevie. Thank you.
Any questions for Joe or comments before we move on to Stevie? Okay, if not, Stevie, you're on.
Thank you, Joe, and hello, Chair and members of the committee. I am Stevie Espinoza with Ariano Associates, and today I'll be talking about our draft stakeholder engagement plan. So our goal is to implement an outreach program that is inclusive. We want to educate stakeholders on potential funding scenarios and associated implications, gather stakeholder input on the funding potential funding scenarios and build collaborative relationships with key stakeholders such as yourselves to lead the implementation of a community-supported regional strategic plan. So there are four main things I want to talk to you today about our outreach strategy. First, we're planning to conduct four stakeholder briefings. And so far, we have plans to meet with the Executive Committee, Transportation Committee, and of course, we're here meeting with you today. We will also be hosting three virtual community meetings where we will hear input from the public, and I'll be reviewing that schedule for that on the next slide. We also recognize the importance of engaging with the Spanish-speaking community in the Coachella Valley, and to do that, we will be providing all of our project materials in Spanish, such as the PowerPoints, flyers, and we're going to be providing Spanish interpretation at each meeting as well. And to notify stakeholders, we are going to launch a extended outreach notification campaign. The main component of the campaign is an extended outreach toolkit. We're going to develop a toolkit, which we will share with you, the committees, and other key stakeholders to make sure your audiences and constituents are notified about our meetings. The toolkit is going to have graphics and copy that's going to be used for newsletters, emails, websites, and your social media platforms of choice, such as Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. But if your cities use other platforms, such as Nextdoor, we can create content for that as well. So the toolkit will be updated for each phase of the meeting, and we plan to send it out prior to each meeting. And we're still identifying other strategies that would reach people outside of those digital methods, just to make sure we're connecting with audiences that can't be reached online. So our outreach schedule is kicking off with April today with our briefing with you. Our first community meeting is scheduled for this June to introduce the project to the public, followed by September. The focus of that would be feedback on alternatives, and we would also plan to brief the executive and transportation committees as well. And our final community meeting would be held in June 2023 for project wrapping conclusions. So before each meeting, we would plan to implement the toolkit outreach period. This is where we would send key stakeholders, the committees, the electronic toolkit that I talked about in the previous slide as well. So thank you very much for being our first briefing. If anything is unclear, or if you think we could do anything to improve our engagement plan, or if you know of stakeholders we need to be reaching out to, we would definitely welcome your opinion and your input. Okay, I will now hand back over to Joe, who will discuss next steps.
Yeah, thank you, Stevie. First off, we want to take the time here today to address questions from the committee, hear your feedback, and then go back on our end and incorporate that into our analysis thus far and our plan to go forward from here on out. What that plan looks like from here on out is that quantitative evaluation I hinted at earlier to actually put some numbers to these tools. There are several of these tools that, just to be completely transparent, some of it is what we would call the easy stuff. A grant program has a certain amount of funding capacity. You know, we've observed, we would sort of list our observations on how much is actually getting awarded for those types of tools. But where our opportunity from our perspective to be more creative is, how do you structure things like housing and sustainability districts in terms of boundaries, percentages of contribution in a way that's actually implementable and potentially, you know, palatable to local communities, and that can actually generate meaningful funding capacity to build projects. We sort of would layer that in with some of these other elements, things like a community land trust in itself is not a funding source. It doesn't generate funding, but it is absolutely a part of the plan. It's a vehicle that can bundle, as an example, potential funding sources. And so it's within our scope to actually put these things together in a structure, a realistic, you know, potential structure. And of course, to continue to vet all that through the stakeholder engagement policy. In that same package that we're talking about is the policy side of things. What are policies that make that whole funding and financing vehicle toolkit implementable and potentially, you know, supportable in our local communities? If at all, these are the questions that we seek to vet during the stakeholder engagement process. So we will outline all that in some detail for stakeholders to weigh in on that. And that's the stakeholder engagement piece throughout the entire engagement through June of 2023. Our plan is to stay in touch both digitally and with meetings like this. so folks can actually hear and give us feedback. So thank you for letting us walk through that again. We'll remain for questions.
Thank you, Joe and Stevie. Are there any questions for the staff or the consultant or comments at this time? I guess I can start off. The only other comment that I would have, other than revenue streams and potential revenue streams, are there any other things that we're looking at as far as what can reduce the either timing, cost of construction, things like that that actually can go to affordable housing dollars and make those dollars go a little bit further?
Peter, I'm happy to sort of take a shot at this, Erica. I'm going to give a straightforward response, and it's not a sellout at all, please. So our scope of work is certainly on the revenue side, but we also know that within the REAP bucket, the revenue regional action planning sort of types of projects that the state has awarded REAP funding for through SCAG and otherwise, there's a category for that, which is reducing costs, things like streamlining. They call out streamlining and permitting, streamlining and environmental analysis, and things like that. We know just from Cosmont's experience, absolutely, there are ways permitting. I wouldn't say it's our expertise. I don't want to give any advice that we're not qualified to give, but we know that there are different ways to do that. I think perhaps as we go through some of our revenue and financing vehicle analysis, if there are ways we can touch on that, we will do that within our scope of work. I think what we'll probably stop is, you know, giving advice on things like permitting, which is certainly not our bailiwick, and we would be speaking at a school if we entered that realm.
Exactly. And I was just going to say, what we could do is, you know, you could just outline some of those things and we can go after them from a committee standpoint.
And Chair Pena, if I could add on too, is a lot of the work that's done at Lift to Rise and the policy committees is focusing on those things that you mentioned. So streamlining issues around CEQA. Another move too is looking at different product types. So there's, you know, whether it's 3D printing or new types of manufactured prefab housing too. So those are being looked at in other realms. And to Joe's point too is we'll be able to capitalize and utilize some of the other REAP studies that are being done on those as well.
Perfect. Anybody else? Any other comments? Okay. There is a recommendation. Is there a motion to move the recommendation?
This is Carol.
Oh, Chair, we were really just looking for your feedback and, you know, and general concurrence on the strategy or any input. It doesn't necessarily need to be a full vote.
Okay.
On this
one. That's fine. So we'll just move it forward and continue to work with staff on outlining the approaches that we will take.
We'll get back to work. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Joe and Stevie. We'll see you soon. Okay, we'll move on to 6B, which is CB Housing First, the first quarter report for 2022. Ms. Information.
Vice Chair, I will be kicking us off a little bit here. I think you've all grown used to our CV200 updates. Just as a little bit of a recap for the committee, and then Anise will highlight some of our clients who we have served. As you recall, the CV200 are these chronically homeless individuals. This is a list that we developed in partnership with law enforcement, code enforcement, and our communities, our member jurisdictions. And as we reported in February, we knocked that down to the CV125 in our first year of internal operations as well. We're very proud of this. This is a great impact for our community, certainly changing lives and really addressing the chronically homeless population here in the Coachella Valley who don't always find help in other programs, including shelters. So at your direction and the direction of the executive committee, we reset the list for 2022. We went back, we worked with your various police departments, our partners, and identified who our CV200 for 2022 would be. Some of these are carryovers, others are not. So to kind of give you a report, the details are in your staff report, but in the first quarter, we started off quite strong at 15 of our CV200 off the list and permanently housed. This was done in large part due to partnerships and us really finding ways to find permanent doors, which continue to be a challenge. And here to kind of talk to you about some of those individuals, a couple of those individuals is Anise. Anise, you want to talk about this gentleman? Anise?
Good morning. Can you see and hear me?
We can hear you. Yes.
You can hear me. Okay, great. So first up, we have Dex. And Dex has been homeless on and off for over 20 years here in the Coachella Valley. He's well known to many of us. And he's been through several shelter programs, but none were completed successfully. And so when the outreach team encountered him again, he had just been discharged from the hospital with a fairly severe injury to his leg. He was placed in a CSH unit and was assisted with acquiring his vital docs. So when housing was identified for him, rather a housing provider, due to his criminal background, initially he was denied. However, case managers were able to collaborate with his housing provider, and ultimately he was accepted into housing. And so he has been placed in his own apartment, and you see him there with his keys. All right. And next up, this is Mr. Ronnie. So Ronnie was living in an encampment under a bridge in the city of Indio near the 10 freeway. Law enforcement was working with him as well as the street outreach team. He was also placed in a CSH unit. And due to his criminal background, he'd actually had significant trouble with identifying housing on his own. And despite the fact that his background was almost 40 years old and he has income. So in working with his case manager, they were ultimately able to locate senior housing for Mr. Ronnie in the city of Hemet. And you see him there when he moved in with his keys.
So thank you, Anise. And you'll recall, as the committee, you've probably grown used to these updated reports. We truly believe in making sure that you're updated along the way with the most recent data. We also have some non-CV200s who we helped in this quarter, a total of 7 households. This is a little bit of an uptick than we saw in previous quarters, and in large part due to partnerships, other providers or organizations or, just many of our stakeholders who just understand some of the potential that our program has and can help make some connections. So we were able to help 7 of those households while keeping a really laser-like focus on the CV200, particularly for our crisis stabilization units. Unfortunately, not all of our stories are successes, though, as you know. Anise, do you want to tell one more story for us?
Sure. So this is a story about Dave, who's on the CV200. And when the outreach team encountered him, he was living behind a gas station in Thousand Palms. He reported having been homeless since 1997 in the city of Thousand Palms, as well as Rancho Mirage. Now, at the time that we met him, he was 64 years old, and he's turned 65 in the program. He was placed in a CSH unit. We were able to assist him working along with Inland County Legal Services to get his Social Security. Prior to that, he had not had any income for over 20 years. And so we collaborated with Adult Protective Services for Mr. David, and he has now been placed in a motel voucher program. He is currently waiting for his housing, and he is number 14 on a waiting list for a supportive housing facility in Cathedral City.
Vice Chair, with that kind of wraps our quarterly report for you. We're certainly happy to address any questions. There's additional detail in your staff report. The availability of beds remains a challenge for our program as well as others, but we have found many solutions, as you can see, and have started the year off with some upticks in our overall progress and success.
I have a question. It's kind of
thank you for that. Questions.
Yeah, if you don't mind. Oh, thank you, John. It's more of a question and a direction. Maybe even Greg can help out on this. I encountered a friend that had been coming to the restaurant for years and with this young lady or his lady friend. They're in their 80s. She's moving in with her children, and he's been living with her, and he has no place to go. So he's not chronically homeless, but he will be homeless. He has a little bit of Social Security money, but when she leaves Cathedral City, he'll be on the streets. So is there a place where, other than chronic homeless or immediate senior homelessness comes? Where's his direction? I sent him to our police department with our liaisons, and there was nothing they could do. Is there any product where he can go attend and find housing?
Greg?
Yeah, and I might kick this to Carrie, but probably especially with his age, Adult Protective Services is probably the first place we would connect him with. Carrie, if you want to chime in, because depending on income and all that, he could bump up on priority list for Section 8 housing. Finding units is another challenge, but Carrie, if you want to add.
Yeah, 500 a month is top Social Security. He was a golf pro, and he worked for cash. So he doesn't have much coming in.
So we definitely connect him with Adult Protective Services and Office on Aging. There could be a way to actually bump up the Social Security just a little. So he's in within the SSI range. The other thing is effective July 1st, Housing Authority, the Board of Supervisors voted to restore the, forgive me for saying this, but we call it the extreme elderly preference, which means anybody 70 years of age or older reaches a top level priority for a voucher. Just do what we found in working on senior homelessness, that people age 70 and over are incredibly vulnerable to housing instability. So if he registers now on the waiting list, and I'll put the link in the chat, then when he that preference comes July 1, he'll be moved to almost near the very top of the list, just behind veterans. So he should receive a Section 8 voucher within the next 6 to 9 months. Again, like Greg said, finding a unit could be more challenging. The desert has more opportunities than the West, but it's still very, very tight for tomorrow.
And Chair, just for the record, we don't use a chat, but if Carrie wants to send that to us, we'll make sure that gets distributed to the committee.
Perfect. Thank you.
And one other note, we would just note that Chair Holsich from the City of Palm Springs looks like she was able to join us.
Oh, great. The perfect timing. I will be able to turn it back over to Christy now if she's available to do that, because I'm just now getting to my destination as well, too. So perfect timing. Thank you for that. Any questions for staff on that? If not, we'll move on to item 6C. And I think, Anise, you're going to take that as well, too.
Yes, thank you, Chair Pena. So our collaborative partnerships have really been the linchpin of success, of the success of this program. And we're constantly trying to find ways to improve our services and better support our clients. And ultimately, of course, to help them identify and secure permanent housing. So last year, we partnered with Inland County Legal Services and established legal clinics biweekly. Legal clinics where the clients are assisted with acquiring their vital documents, as well as accessing public benefits like Social Security, SSI, and SSDI. And ICLS was actually awarded in January, I believe, a grant in the amount of $1.5 million, and that is for activities associated with homelessness and homeless prevention. And so, as a partner and subrecipient of that grant, Coachella Valley Housing First will be receiving $300,000 over the course of 3 years, which will be allocated toward the cost of the legal clinics. And so moving forward, advocates from ICLS will be joining the street outreach team to provide these services to clients in the field with the street outreach, as well as virtually through the Mobile Access Center. So we're very excited about this partnership, and the recommendation is to authorize the executive director to negotiate a memorandum of understanding with ICLS to accept a $300,000 three-year grant from the State Bar of California for homelessness services. And there's more information in the staff report, and I'm available for questions if there are any. Thank you.
Any questions for Anise? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to accept Ransom Mirage.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion second. Please say aye by raising your hand. Is there anybody opposed? Abstain. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Anise. And with that, we'll move on to item 6D, Riverside County's Homeless and Housing Strategic Action Plan. Greg.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Pena. The staff report is pretty detailed on this, and we did attach in the info section the actual strategic action plan. It's long, but I encourage you to read it. This was actually a two-year endeavor by the Continuum of Care and Board of Governance with the input of numerous stakeholders and really a lot of input, especially from our service providers out here in the Valley who are engaged throughout. What is good about this is many of you know the county had kind of an action plan a few years ago, but it was really more conceptual than data-driven, metrics-oriented, based on goals and outcomes. And so that's what we really tried to focus on in adopting this five-year plan. Just really quickly highlighting kind of the five basic principles is really to strengthen the system to better prevent homelessness. That gets to your point, Councilmember Carnival, about those that are falling into homelessness. How do we make sure that we're preventing that? Two is really addressing the equitability of health and safety and the service needs of unsheltered individuals. Also expanding our capacity to provide a safe and effective shelter, and primarily though interim housing, again, expanding on the Housing First model that's been quite successful in the Valley here. And then expanding and ensuring equitable access to permanent housing. This gets into, again, to your point, Pinyon, your opinion on how we're looking at ways to speed up the production of not only affordable housing, but affordable housing developments that contain those permanent supportive housing units as well, and how we capitalize on resources from the state and feds to make sure we're providing the financial means to support those PSH units. And then finally, preventing people from experiencing the crisis of homelessness. And this gets into the whole continuum of care from birth till death on how we as a county, through our various departments, but primarily through DPSS and Housing and Workforce Solutions, really address prevention and overall health and well-being and social determinants of health so that people don't experience homelessness. So we're excited to start implementing this. And we'll be doing quarterly and annual reports on the results, again, based on the data and metrics. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Great. Any questions for Greg? Okay. If not, we'll
move on. I have a question if I can. Okay, sorry, sure. Vice Chair. I apologize to the committee and the public. I'm traveling for work, so here I am. Greg, I just have a question. I know in the staff report you noted sort of how the gaps analysis by LASAR and how, and my question is how cities might be able to align our planning around homelessness with the county's plan. And by the way, this is huge progress. So thank you to you and the supervisor for leading this effort so we can make sure that we get data-driven results in our community around homelessness. So yeah, my question is, how can the cities best align our plans with this plan?
Yeah, that's a great question. And a lot of conversation was had with other city electeds through the planning process and developing the action plan. And specifically because state funding and other sources of funding require some type of action plan, the way we designed this is that so cities could align or basically adopt the county plan so that they don't have to come up with a whole new plan and reinvent the wheel. As most of you know, I'm moving on to the Housing and Workforce Solutions Department July 1st. a big part of my role will be doing just that, Christy, is working with the local cities and regional operations such as CVAG. There's other ones in the western part of the county. And then individual cities like you that have really stepped up in funding and work to help align the activities that you're doing with not only the county strategic plan, but working in partnership, much like we're proving on the Navigation Center and other activities we've done with you all in Palm Springs. So it's a great question. And of course, we'll be reaching out to the rest of the cities. But what's great about our region is that we have all these nine cities, actually 10, if you include Blythe and the tribe, that, you know, perfectly really do align with this plan.
Thanks, Greg. Anything else? And Christy, I'm glad you could join us. If not, we'll move on to the update, item 6E, and that's the ad hoc efforts to explore additional homelessness resources and policies.
Erica, you want me to take this, correct? Yeah, as she nods, yes. So as many of you are aware, again, really detailed staff report, but Councilmember Jonathan had brought up the idea of how do we look at other methods of getting our homeless individuals into treatment, especially those that have severe substance use and behavioral health problems. And so we established a subcommittee that's been meeting on this. We had a really good presentation from Sacramento on their proposed policy. That's still working its way through the Sacramento politics. But this last committee, we had a presentation from the DA's office on their home program. And many of you are familiar with the Indio Corps program, or we have our drug courts or our veterans courts. This is basically modeling that off of those type of specialized courts into a homeless court. So these are individuals that have some linkage to the criminal justice system. So it's not for every homeless individual with chronic mental health or substance use problems, but those tied to the legal system. And basically not punitive, at least we try not to be punitive, but more of a restorative program and working with them through any behavioral health, substance use problems, as well as hopefully once they go through the program, you know, forgiving any of their fines and stuff so that we can get them into housing. The program works very closely with behavioral health, and Carrie and I are having discussions on how we even work closer from the department level with the DA, prosecutor and probation as well, so that we're not only dealing with behavioral issues, but in conjunction is working on the placement into permanent housing as well. So with that, I'm happy to, and then I'll expand on that. As that gets developed, it looks like that's going to pilot in Riverside, but we're advocating really hard to have it pilot code 2.0 in the valley here. But then in conjunction as well, many of you are aware or have been informed of the governor's proposal on the Care Court program. That right now is moving through the legislature. Once we get a little more finalized language, we'll be bringing back a presentation to the subcommittee on that. A lot of questions around enforceability, funding for the housing piece of it. We know that some civil rights groups have a little bit of opposition to it. Some have a lot of opposition to it. So as that moves forward, again, we'll be bringing that to the subcommittee. And of course, we'll inform the entire homeless committee on the progress with that. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions. It looks like Councilmember Carnival, you have one.
Greg, it's not more of a question, just more of a comment. Maybe you can even tag on this. I was just so impressed. You went through it pretty quick, but the departments that are behind this program, there's probably 15 departments in County Riverside that are supporting this here. So it's just not a real small off-the-cuff type thing. They put a lot of time and effort into creating this. I think it's going to be a big tool to be helping homeless out there. And I was just impressed with all the departments in Riverside County that's involved.
Yeah. And it's, you know, thanks, Mark. And, these programs are highly successful. Carrie can attest to this as well as, you know, our family preservation courts. And I actually attend these graduations like once a month, and you're literally in tears about the stories these people have. And how they've recovered, you know, the veterans courts. And again, you know, I wish Wayman was on, but the Indio Corps programs, it's been around for a while and it's great. So, but it does, Mark, it's not one department anymore. It takes a village, as they say, to deal with this. And it is a whole, you know, continuum of care process as well.
Thanks for that update. Any other questions or comments? If not, we'll move on to item number 7, which is informational. All the information is there for you to peruse. Are there any questions on any of those?
You know, okay. If I could just add, Vice Chair Pena, is I just kind of wanted to highlight item D on the behavioral health partnerships. Anise mentioned this earlier about the collaborative efforts that we're always trying to look for. You know, we've all been talking about this collaborative work for a few years here in this committee, and this is another great example of that, of Diane Bynes, who works with the street medicine program at CSUSB, coming on and helping us with some clinical help in psychiatry area for referrals. And in addition, the developing partnership with the UCR psychiatric residency program. And a lot of that will be done in the mobile van. But again, just really emphasizing the importance of these collaboratives and that we're actually making them work. We're also working to renew the MOU with IEHP, and especially with the new CalAIM, some of the possibilities and potential benefits around billing for housing and services through as well. So I just wanted to highlight those really quickly.
Thanks, Greg. Any other questions or comments? Okay, if not, we'll move on to public comment on non-agenda items. Either Jessica or Erica, do we have any public comments?
We did not receive any public comments, and I do not see any hands raised.
Okay, thank you. We'll move on to announcements. Our next meeting will be held on Wednesday, May 18th at 10 o'clock via Zoom, and the next meeting of the Executive Committee will be held on Monday, April 25th at 4:30 via Zoom. And without any further ado, we'll move to adjournment. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Seconded.
Motion and a second. Please raise your hand by saying aye, and we can leave the meeting. Thank you all again for attending, and thanks for all of the staff comments as well today, too. So with that, we are adjourned.
Thank you. Thank you, Vice Chair, for chairing the meeting. Appreciate it.
Thank you.